On the record. On News Talk.
With Pinergy. Supplying energy with insight to forward-thinking Irish businesses.
My first two guests this morning, Gabriel Scally, who is Honorary Professor of Public Health at the University of Bristol, and Sam McConkey, who is the head of the Department of International Health and Tropical Medicine at the RCSI. Gentlemen, thank you both for joining me this morning. It's very difficult to know where to start, given how negative and how pessimistic the outlook is. But I suppose, Sam McConkey, your thoughts just as an overview right now of where we stand and how much worse things could get in the short term.
So there's a lot of uncertainty there, Gavin. We're almost at the stage where we're really preparing for a really big trial, a hard trial, and that's for all of us in Ireland, particularly those working in the health sector and the hospitals, and for patients and families that are affected by this disease. And we really don't know at this point how bad it's going to get. So where the next 2-4 weeks go, we really don't know. We're hoping that it won't lead to outbreaks on the scale that we saw back in March and April, outbreaks in hostels, outbreaks in nursing home, outbreaks in hospitals, and outbreaks in workplaces. So if we can prevent the outbreaks, and if we can stop and switch off onward transmission by decreasing socializing, which I think we're doing in the last week or so, and if we can care for those who are sick with oxygen and with the other dexamethasone and supportive care that people really benefit from, then I think we can get through this. But we don't know, Gavin, how bad it will be.
To your mind, Sam, is there any positives that we can take from our experience the first time around? Are there any ways in which we are better prepared this time?
Yes, I think we have more confidence that the personal protective equipment that we use, if we know people are potentially infected, we can use the equipment and they will work. We're also hopeful that a vaccine will protect some of us who've had it already. And we also have a better technologies. We know that this is a disease that causes type 1 respiratory failure. People need a lot of supplemental oxygen, as you mentioned earlier. We know that steroids, the dexamethasone, the British did a large clinical trial showing that dexamethasone improves outcomes substantially. We're also using heparin, and we're also keeping other diseases like diabetes and blood pressure optimally controlled. So by helping people who are sick with COVID to control all their other things and keep all of their normal body salts within a very tight, narrow range, sort of by artificially measuring them and keeping them normal, that helps people to survive and come out of it the other end.
Gabriel Scally is also with us, as I said, Honorary Professor of Public Health at the University of Bristol. Good morning to you, Gabriel. Let's try and focus on whatever positives there are. Supplemental to what Sam has just said, to your mind, is there anything now that we are better prepared for, or how do you think we stand as we head into the grips of another crisis like this?
Well, I think there are the two key aspects. One, as Sam has talked about, the care that is going to be needed for the people who, whether we like it or not, have got the virus and are going to be very ill over the next number of weeks. And I mean, Sam's quite right. We've got some fantastically skilled intensive care staff, and their skills have unfortunately developed a lot because they've learnt, and they're some of the smartest doctors there are. And also, there are new therapies, and there are a couple of new drugs that have been identified over the last couple of weeks that will be helpful. But the other big thing is about the viral load on the country, the number of people with the virus and the number of people transmitting it around the country. And the only good thing we know is that Ireland can get it down. We can collectively get the virus levels down, the infection levels down. And the Republic of Ireland had a fantastic record in the autumn. It's a pity it didn't keep it down at almost at zero as it was during the summer, which is something a lot of people wished the government to do, but that they didn't think that was possible. So it has gone up now really dramatically in the last couple of weeks, but avoiding a second wave in the autumn was a great achievement. And so it can be done, and people can make the difference and get this back down again, but it requires sort of real iron discipline from individuals, from communities, from families, from all of us.
Sam, to your mind, what contribution do you think the new British strain has made to contribute to the Republic having quite the problem that it does right now? Or how much of it is simply down to people socialising because we had what was probably Europe's most relaxed pre-Christmas regime, and of course it has resulted in Europe's worst post-Christmas crisis?
So the evidence from Killian DeGasque and Gavin is that when they've sequenced the viruses from last week, about a quarter of them, 25%, one in four, were from the new British strain. But to turn that around the other way, that means that three quarters of what we're seeing last week was actually just regular old diverse variants. So I think it's misleading to think that this is a problem predominantly or only caused by this new mutant strain. It's certainly there and it's certainly a factor. And it could, of course, spread more and get worse. But what from the data last week, which I think is very, very reliable, when Killian Gaskin sequences the virus and they can definitively tell us, is it that new B117, as they call it from UK, or is it another one? That's reliable data. And even though they haven't sequenced huge numbers, still three quarters of it is the regular old diverse variant. So this is COVID-19. It's not some new disease, which reassures me in a way that then if we do the same as we did before, we can actually control that.
That was the one thing that I wanted to ask, though, because it is 25% in the most recent sequencing that you mentioned Killian DeGasquin has done. In the sequences before that, it was only 10%. So clearly its share of the Irish viral load is growing that bit more. Does that mean that any public health measures or restrictions have to be that bit more severe, or that they might perhaps be less effective because we now have a strain of it which is simply able to overcome more hurdles?
Yes, it seems that this new strain may have higher viral load and be more transmissible, is the data that they've shown from the UK. So if that was to happen here, then it means we need to be more thorough on our public health measures. Now, at present, our public health measure, Gavin, is really a stay at home. And by staying at home, this virus, even the new variant, won't be jumping, 20 meters or 200 meters. So this stay at home advice that we've been given and not to socialize is still very robust and very reliable. And I strongly believe that will work against the old variants and the new variants. So it's not that we have no toolbox of preventive measures. I do feel this, we're learning prevention is better than cure, and while we're dealing now with how to manage all the sick people, we really have to go back to the preventive message and ask how do we prevent it spread, and the answer is by staying at home, not socialising, and that I'm confident will work for the new virus as well as the old one.
To that end, but just before I bring Gabriel back in, what did you make of the idea that schools will be closed with the partial exception, at least for a couple of days, of Leaving Cert pupils? Are we at a situation where it is more advisable that really the entire school cohort should have been staying at home at least until we're over the crest of this wave?
Well, like all of the interventions in society, it's a balance. The values of education are huge, values of business are huge, but we are in a crisis point over these first few weeks in January, shockingly and sadly and surprisingly for many of us, it's here. So I feel we have to do as much as we can to get things back in control and then start to reprioritize the looking after our next generation's education.
Gabriel, on that point, do you reckon that the crisis was so severe that even if classrooms were considered to be safe environments, that it does justify closing schools for all intakes and not just for some exceptional few?
Oh, I think so, because it's not just what goes on in the school. Important though that is, it's getting kids to school, to and from school. It's everything that goes with it. It's the staff of the school and their families need to be protected. So I think that restriction is right. What I would really like to see is us stopping the virus getting to the island of Ireland. And I know there have been travel restrictions put in place because of the variants. And it's great that the couple of cases of the South African variant have been caught. Yeah. But I find it astounding. Of all the islands in the world, Britain and Ireland are doing the worst. And the reason we're doing so badly is it's basically an open door policy. There has been self-isolation, but that really turns out to be voluntary isolation. And that's not really good enough, because we know this virus is very dangerous. These new variants causing havoc, and it needs to be looked at again.
I was going to ask you, Gabriel, because for so much of the second wave, it's not the case, sadly, right now, where the Republic has overtaken the North in terms of its incidence rate, but that for so long, there was a sense that the Republic's efforts were undermined by what the North was doing. But I was going to say that, is there a balance or is there a benefit to having both jurisdictions serving a lockdown at the same time? But then you remind me that the travel ban, which has been implemented by the Republic for travellers from Great Britain, can easily be circumvented by flying to Belfast and driving across an open border.
Yeah, it's crazy stuff, isn't it? But I and many others have been calling right from the very beginning that we needed an all-Ireland approach. I think what made the difference and that helped the Republic avoid the second wave was having pretty good contact tracing, finding, testing, tracing, isolating regime. Not perfect and needed a lot more resource, but you in the Republic, at least close contacts were being tested. In the North, they've hardly got any contact tracing and have hardly had any contact tracing. Now, at a time of crisis just now, because of the huge number of cases, contact tracing is really very difficult and can be only minimal. But getting that system working and resourced to do the job for us, because it's going to be needed for months and months and months. And I still think it is not too late for the politicians to show statesmanship and stateswomanship across the whole island and get us through this next 6 months, this year, really, in an integrated way, because we're losing struggles against this virus because we're divided, and it's we shouldn't be divided. If this was a disease of pigs, of chickens, or of cattle, we would have it knocked on the head without the slightest difficulty on an All Ireland basis. But it's a task ahead for our politicians if they're prepared to grasp it.
Gabriel, we don't have very much time left, but there's one thing that I did want to ask you about. I know that you're obviously intimately aware with the delivery of cancer systems in the Republic, and you've studied the cervical cancer thing very extensively. I see in the Sunday Telegraph today in the UK that there are now fewer than half of the usual load of cancer patients in British hospitals because the health service is struggling to cope with the knock-on effects of COVID. We obviously have a very big backlog and some very negative health outcomes as a result of our first lockdown and the cancellation of non-urgent care. We're back in that sort of territory now again. What sort of compound impact will it have doing that in the Republic a second time?
Oh, it'll have always have an impact. The health services anywhere that have to cope with this huge pandemic and hospitals become dangerous patients for places for other patients who are coming in for other treatments, as well as the staff being diverted to look after COVID. The virus just doesn't kill people directly, it kills people indirectly. And that's why, you know, whatever people think about this virus, it is a huge problem for us all. And it's a problem for the man or the woman who's developing symptoms that might be cancer and needs them urgently seen. And to help that person, we've all got to follow the rules. We've got to isolate. In fact, we should be going further than the rules. Are there other things that you could do as an individual to keep yourself safe, to keep your family safe, and keep your community safe from this virus? Because it's ruining lives.
Sam McConkey, final question to you. As of this morning, there are 1,421 COVID-19 patients in hospitals. By my back of an envelope calculation, that means that about one in every eight patients in an Irish hospital is there because of COVID-19, which is a huge load beyond what they'd usually have to bear. There are 37 available ICU beds this morning. We've read in the papers about the limits to which they can expand that. What happens if we do get to a situation that we all hope we don't? But if we do get to territory where there are simply more patients that require ICU beds than there are beds to go around, what happens then?
So it's possible to open, for example, the operating room recovery area into a temporary ICU, which is where people recovering from a surgery might normally be for a few hours until they stabilize and might well go from there to an ICU in normal circumstances. The issues will be running out of things like skilled nursing staff to run the ICU. Tends to be the rate limiting factor rather than the beds and the ventilators. And similarly, as you mentioned, running out of oxygen, unfortunately, is a fairly terrifying prospect. It's not just the ICU, the ward care, which is oxygen, steroids, heparin and good management of other conditions, is also leads to much better outcomes for people with sort of moderate to severe COVID who maybe don't need ICU as such, but still are sick enough to benefit and their lives can be saved from just good quality oxygen and care. So it's a matter of converting other non-COVID, non-infectious disease wards temporarily into COVID-only wards. Mm. And that's what's been prepared for
at
present.
And if that isn't enough, then what next?
That's a very difficult challenge for people to try and ask, you know, if we've limited care and more the demand outstrips the supply, how do you manage that? My view is, as a physician, as a doctor in the front line, that's not something that I should decide sort of myself individually. It's a discussion that would have to be had in a much broader societal way of how to prioritize. Typically, we prioritize people who will benefit most from the need. So when somebody has a reversible condition, something that's very reversible with known technologies with a high degree of confidence, tend to have those offered to them because it's reversible, whereas people with more irreversible problems, more towards palliation direction. So it's how to balance those choices if the demand exceeds the supply. I hope that we're able to build more and more and more surge capacity to be able to supply some healthcare and some basic good healthcare, even if it's not intensive care, to everyone who needs it in Ireland. That's what we did succeed in doing back in March, and I'm hopeful that we can do that again. There's a very strong spirit of cooperation and working together in the health service, and a lot of very, very skilled nurses and doctors and physiotherapists and many, many staff and administrators and radiotherapists and radiologists. So there is a cadre of Irish staff that are, I would say, exceptionally good at doing good things. But if they're difficult ethical decisions, Gavin, I think it has to be an open, more broad discussion with society as to how we manage more precious limited resources if they're truly running out. But I hope we don't get there.
It's certainly it's a sobering idea. We will let you go. Sam McConkey from RCSI, thank you very much for joining us this morning. And Gabriel Scally from the University of Bristol. Very much appreciate both of your insights this morning.